They've been hailed as a miracle drug, reshaping bodies, changing lives and fueling a global weight loss boom. But now there's a new phrase creeping into this conversation, Ozempic breasts. It might sound flippant, maybe even a bit ridiculous, but doctors have finally confirmed that the changes behind it are anything but. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And GLP-1 medications like Ozempic and Mounjaro are being used more and more and more in Ireland, originally for diabetes, now increasingly for weight loss. And the results, as we know, can be dramatic. Shane Beattie told News Talk Daily all about it last year in a podcast called Obesity, Stigma, Mounjaro and Me, which you can still listen to on the Go Loud player. So the benefits for many people are highly visible, but the side effects can be too. We've heard about Ozempic face, Ozempic butt. Now even, Ozempic chest. That's loose skin and loss of volume and a real visible shift in body shape that many patients feel they were never warned about. So we're asking, are people really going into these treatments fully informed of the benefits as well as the risks? Well, journalist Rosalind Skillen from Irish Country Living set about looking into this story and she joins me now. Rosalind, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you for having me on, Ciara.
What initially led you to investigate these specific physical changes that we're talking about?
Yeah, well, I suppose I have been interested in the discourse around GLP-1s for some time. Last year, I reported on the growing numbers of people from the south flocking to Northern Ireland to get their GLP-1 prescriptions because it's more accessible and cheaper up there. But I suppose it's over 4 years since Ozempic was first licensed in Ireland for the treatment of diabetes, and it's been over 1 year since Mounjaro was made available via private prescription. So the piece that I have in today's paper is kind of taking stock, I suppose, and looking at how, yes, this is a health story, I'm a health reporter, but this also touches so many aspects of society, like food, lifestyle, and even fashion. And the terms that you outlined, Ozempic breasts, Ozempic face, I think in many ways are emblematic of that, because it's this discourse that's bound up with kind of appearance, aesthetics, rather than cosmetic or medical use rather.
And you did, as you say, start noticing some changes in areas like the fashion industry, both on the catwalks and in the clothes shops. What did you see exactly?
So the Vogue Business Size Inclusivity report came out last month, and I was quite interested in the outcomes of that because they talked about how GLP-1s were a driver in the decrease in plus size models on the catwalk, how it was influencing the sizes that were available in high street shops, and also how GLP-1s were changing design. So many of your listeners may be, I don't know if they're anticipating it with excitement or dread that skinny jeans are back in. And also drawstring trousers because of weight fluctuation, for example. But the report basically said that out of nearly 8,000 looks presented for the autumn winter collection in 2026, just 0.3% of these looks were plus size. And that's down from the last season, which was 0.9%. And just for your listeners, plus size is a UK size 18. So they tied this dramatic drop in plus size models to GLP-1s and kind of the surge of skinny, just the cultural desire to be thin, which was kind of reminiscent of the 90s, but it's back in now.
And you mentioned the Vogue Size Inclusivity report, and let's face it, the catwalk has never really been a kind of place for people with typical body sizes. But it does feel like some of the shifts in favour of body positivity are being lost. Are they putting it down to the presence and the availability of these drugs and what they can do?
Yeah, totally. And it doesn't even seem that long ago that we were kind of in the heights of that body positivity movement as well. But I kind of talked to some Irish designers because I was interested, and obviously this is a global report, and whether there were any reflections in an Irish context, I suppose. So some Irish designers told me that, yes, they felt that Irish design was being impacted, that people were looking for smaller, medium sizes, but it really depended in terms of the cohort of consumers they cater for as well. One designer who has stock in Ireland, but also in the US and UK, said she was selling out of smaller sizes a lot quicker. And then one wedding dress designer that I spoke to said those really like figure hugging wedding dresses are back in. So I suppose, yes, the GLP-1s have been identified as a key driver in that. We're really seeing the impact that it's having in the fashion industry.
In terms of the phrases that are being used here, the words Ozempic face, Ozempic butt, Ozempic chest, what exactly are we talking about? What physical changes are happening?
Yeah, and some experts don't like these phrases and this terminology because it can be quite casual. And again, it's emphasizing the fact that these obesity treatment drugs are being tied to the aesthetic, to the cosmetic, rather than the medical. And even the way we refer to them now is like weight loss jabs. And a lot of experts that I spoke to said, no, they're obesity treatment drugs. So this kind of thing as well. But I suppose when you're saying around the changes that happen to your body, I guess these terms refer to the changes in the size, the shape of your body, and the fact that often you're with rapid weight loss, you're losing a lot of fat very fast. So you're left with a lot of loose skin, basically. And a lot of people don't think of that. And one of the GPs that I spoke to said that a lot of people do not think of that when they go on these medications, that you are being left with a lot of loose skin. And that's like the terms Ozempic face, which refers to the kind of gaunt and sunken cheeks, Ozempic neck, which is a lot of the loose, sagging skin around the neck. And then that brings us on, I suppose, to Ozempic breasts, which again refers to the change in the shape and the size of breasts and how the weight loss causes the breast to lose a lot of volume. And then again, you're left with a lot of loose skin.
And in terms of the reporting of those phenomena, how did you separate anecdotal reports of that happening from medically supported evidence that that is happening?
I just spoke to a lot of very prominent figures, I suppose, in the obesity world. I spoke to Professor Donald O'Shea, who's a prominent consultant endocrinologist in St. Vincent's University Hospital. He hadn't heard of the term Ozempic breast, but he'd heard of some of the other ones. And as I said, experts don't really like this terminology because it's quite casual and it seems a bit throwaway, I suppose. But he did say, yeah, the cultural desire to be thin is driving this obsession. And experts like him really caution against this convergence of the cosmetic with the medical and the fact that these are being used in an aesthetic way. And another GP I spoke to had heard of the terms, again, was a little bit uncomfortable with them. Right. But I suppose like we've all heard of them anecdotally as well, although they're not like medical diagnoses. It's important to point that out. These aren't medical diagnoses. They're just, as you said at the top of the show, like side effects, I suppose, of GLP-1 medications and rapid weight loss.
So at this point, we don't have strong clinical data behind these phenomena. We're still really in the early observational territory when it comes to seeing how these are impacting people's bodies.
Yeah, but we don't even have any data on how many people are taking these drugs in Ireland. So that's another thing that experts I spoke to last year were saying. They were wanting a national patient registry to be set up because we don't have any idea how many people are using them. And the majority of people taking GLP-1s in Ireland are paying for it privately. And this costs up to £300 a month, depending on the injectable, depending on the dosage.
In terms of this rapid weight loss that you talk about and then the impact that it can have on the tissue and on the skin, are there particular factors that make someone more likely to experience these changes?
No, I don't think that there's any factors that predispose people to experiencing these changes. As far as I'm aware from the conversations that I had, there are no factors that make someone more or less likely. It's to do with rapid weight loss, and it would be the same even if you're not on like a GLP-1. That's another thing to highlight. It is just the fact that you're losing so much weight so fast when you're on these medications. But even if you weren't taking them and in any other context in which you lost weight very fast, like the same result would occur.
I'm so conscious when we're having this conversation, Rosalind, about the photos that appeared in recent months of Kelly Osbourne. And it sparked this massive debate online about her dramatic transformation. And she came out afterwards and really slammed those who were so critical of what she had done to herself. How do we frame a story around this, or how do we frame a conversation around this without reinforcing stigma around appearance, particularly a woman's appearance, time and time again?
Yeah, and I think that is a danger of these GLP-1s, because what experts were saying is that they're kind of like re-stigmatizing obesity in a sense, because of the fact that they're linking it to a social trend, they're linking thinness to a social norm. And in the medical community now, over the past 10 years, there is like evidence and a recognition that obesity is a medical disease, and that it's not just about eating less and moving more. And the experts really welcome the use of these drugs under that really restrictive criteria in which it was first introduced in Ireland. And I suppose that's what's important. Now we're seeing this like merging of two worlds, where in Ireland, like, these drugs were first introduced for a very specific cohort of the population. Now they're so widely available, and now people are so flippant about them as well. So I suppose that's part of the difficulty as well.
Does your reporting suggest that when people go on these medications, that they are perhaps sold an incomplete picture about some of the potential side effects?
I think people who, you have to have a prescription to access these medications. So assumedly people would have had that conversation with their doctor, but I know some people are really desperate and they want to be on them. And again, that's another part of the conversation, how people are willing to take the risk to be thin. Like, what are the things that people are willing to tolerate to be thin? But I did, yeah, in terms of side effects, like last January, actually, the January just gone, the BBC reported that the number of gallbladder surgeries recorded by NHS England in 2024 to 2025 was at its highest peak in the last decade. And doctors there said there could be a link between obesity treatment drugs and an increase in gallbladder removals. Gallstones is a side effect of GLP-1s. And when I spoke to Professor O'Shea, he said one third of people stopped taking these medications because of the side effects like nausea and constipation. So yeah, there is a kind of bigger picture. And some experts would say, you know, this isn't a long-term solution for obesity, but they definitely shouldn't be used then as a short-term thing. And I suppose that's why it's really important to emphasize that the studies of these medications are being done in a context of really restrictive criteria, people who have a body mass index of 30 or more, people who have diabetes or pre-diabetic, and that's the group of people for whom they are proven to be beneficial, and they have not been studied in the context in which like they're being taken currently, where it's if you want to drop a dress size or if you want to lose a bit of weight before a friend's wedding.
I suppose the very serious part of this is that for somebody who has got very necessary weight loss goals from a medical point of view, supported by their GP who knows them, the distressing part for them is that they might reach those weight loss goals, but they might end up with this new aesthetic challenge, which could equally damage their self-esteem and their own sense of positive body image. And that's a bit we haven't really talked about yet enough as a society.
It's actually true. I think that conversation has only started to happen more. Like, only last week I saw a headline in another paper about a man who had designed this product for all the loose skin as a result of GLP-1 medications. And I've heard reports of more women who are getting aesthetic procedures to correct Ozempic face. So maybe they're getting fillers to address the loss of volume and elasticity. In terms of the corrections that people are then making to their body off the back of having taken this drug in the first place, because the time has passed, it's been a couple of years now, the discourse around these is advancing in a really interesting way.
Rosalind, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us on News Talk Daily today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the conversation.
Well, Dr. Mick Crotty is the clinical lead for obesity with the Irish College of GPs, and he joins me now on News Talk Daily. I'm so conscious of the terms that we're using here, Ozempic breasts, Ozempic face, Ozempic butt. They're clearly not medical terms. What do you think of them?
Yeah, I think it speaks to a narrative online where I suppose the brand name of a particular medication has been attached to all these different things. But really, what we're seeing is when people lose significant amounts of weight, that it has an impact on body composition, distribution of weight, and whether they lose that weight through nutritional, behavioral strategies, pharmacotherapy, medications, or bariatric surgery, we see similar changes in distribution of weight, muscle mass. So it's a function of weight loss. But online, that has kind of gained the narrative where a brand name of a medication has been attached to it. And I suppose it increases the profile of these products. But also, I suppose it's, you know, jumping on a little bit of a trend.
One of the things being suggested is the side effects that you talk about there. Yes, you can find yourself in that position through many different ways. But the reason that people are experiencing this particular physical body change is because of the speed of the weight loss that is associated with taking GLP-1s.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, first of all, we have to look at kind of appropriate use of medication. So GLP-1 medications are obesity management medications. They're not weight loss medications. So when we're using them for people who are living with obesity, in general, it's kind of a risk assessment of benefit versus risk. And in somebody living with obesity, there's benefits there. If somebody who doesn't live with obesity is using these medications for weight loss short term, then we don't have safety or effectiveness data for that. And I suppose that's not what the medications are kind of indicated for. In any approach to kind of treating obesity or managing weight, it should be very much sustainable, healthy, gradual changes over time, kind of while supporting people. So it's not about losing as much weight as quickly as we might consider with diet culture. It's about kind of improving the health, well-being and quality of life of individuals. So again, if I meet somebody in clinic and they are going on an obesity management medication, it's very much gauging, making sure they're not having side effects, making sure that the response is gradual and healthy, and that they're able to maintain their muscle mass and maintain their quality of life. So one of the challenges, I think, is the support that people require. You know, treating people with the medication, it's not just giving them a prescription or accessing the medication. People need an understanding and they need ongoing support and medical care, like we treat blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes and other areas. So I think, you know, we need to separate diet culture, the cultural desire to be thin, versus obesity care, which is medical and health focused.
Yeah, and Rosalind Skillen talked about the Vogue Business Size Inclusivity Report. She talked about the decrease in plus size models. And I'm wondering, is there a danger now of stigma arising from the use of GLP-1s in that perhaps there is a pressure, once again, to conform to a certain body type because these drugs are becoming so popular and are leading to vast amounts of weight loss amongst a certain cohort of the population?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is always a challenge. And I suppose, you know, there is a stigma around living with excess weight and obesity. There's a stigma around accessing treatments, whether it is surgical treatment, medication treatment, nutritional treatment. There is a stigma around body size and shape and that weight bias that, you know, judgments are made about people based on body size or shape. It's interesting because in the area of obesity, we're moving kind of beyond size and body mass index. We're looking at the impact on health and really focusing on health rather than size and shape. But certainly online, with kind of potentially some people using obesity management medications inappropriately, I would agree that there is that kind of increasing pressure on people around body size and shape. And really, that's where we need to focus on using these treatments, which can be safe, effective treatments when used properly, but using them appropriately. And you know, moving away from this idea of weight loss, you know, that these are not skinny jabs, quick fixes, focusing more on health, well-being and kind of long-term sustainable treatment for people.
Are you worried about people who don't have an issue with obesity accessing these drugs now?
Yes, personally, I'm very worried about that because that is not where these treatments have been shown to be safe and effective and have proven benefit. And when people are accessing them online, those people may be living with obesity, they may be advocating for their own health, but they need support. We wouldn't access blood pressure medication, asthma inhalers, chemotherapy. We wouldn't access that online without the support of a healthcare practitioner. And again, in treating obesity, we need to be focused on, you know, people understanding the biology, understanding that they shouldn't have significant side effects, understanding what else that they need to be focusing on in addition to being on the medications. So it concerns me a lot that potentially people can go online, access these medications without talking to anybody, without support, without guidance, not knowing that they need to also focus on contraception, avoiding pregnancy while they're on these medications, not being aware that these medications are required long-term, potentially lifelong intervention for people. So again, you know, information, knowledge is vital and support is vital for people too.
And this is what I'm seeing and hearing anecdotally is people who are the correct weight for their height, their age, etc., their gender, seeking access to this medication to lose that extra half stone, to shift a bit of weight before a big event. Are you hearing about that? Are you seeing that in your practice?
I'm hearing about it online and I'm hearing about it in society. And I suppose that does concern me too. That is not what obesity management medications are for. These are for treatment of people whose excess weight is having a negative impact on their health. That's where they're proven to be safe and effective. So again, I suppose I am constantly drawing the distinction between the cultural desire to be thin and diet culture, which is perhaps what we're talking about there with people who are accessing these medications without a good clinical indication, versus obesity care, somebody living with a complex, chronic, progressive neuroendocrine disease that deserves treatment. And they're not the same thing. Whereas I suppose I would focus on health, quality of life, and treating people to improve their well-being and health long-term. Diet culture, weight loss, that's a different area. And it's not what these medications are for, and not what they should be used for. And again, I suppose, you know, in my clinical practice, it's important that we're talking about that and we're kind of highlighting to people this information, this knowledge. People are intelligent, and you know, unless we're giving people information to understand the appropriate use of treatments, then you know this is going to be an ongoing problem.
Is there much in the way of clinical data in relation to things like that Ozempic face or Ozempic breast that I talked about? And are there any physical factors that make people who are using this drug, hopefully in the correct way, more susceptible to these things?
So I suppose weight change of any type, whether it is, as I said, nutritionally driven, whether it is driven by medication or pharmacotherapy, we do see not just the loss of fatty tissue, but we lose some lean mass, and some of that is muscle mass. So we will constantly be talking to people about the importance of protein, you know, to maintain muscle, the importance of resistance, physical activity, to maintain muscle, gradual weight change over time, avoiding major side effects and drastic kind of changes. Again, to support people's health, but irrespective of how somebody's weight changes, you know, these are things that are seen. But from a health point of view, focusing on balanced nutrition, focusing on movement and sleep and stress and behavioral interventions in conjunction with the medication is vital. In the same way as we treat other chronic diseases, it's not, you know, a medication is not a cure. It's a treatment. It's a tool that facilitates people who are intelligent, who know what to do. It treats the biological components so that they can engage on these good health behaviors, but it doesn't replace health behaviors. You know, they're still vital, and again, that's where, you know, supervision, making sure people are not having side effects, making sure people are approaching this in a health focused way, and the oversight of somebody who you know is experienced in this area, whether it be a person's general practitioner or an obesity expert. You know, this is vital. People coming to see me for treatment and care, we can talk about different options, we can talk about safe use of medication. If somebody's accessing these medications online without support, it's really the Wild West, and it concerns me hugely. We need to support people, we need to follow them up long term, but accessing medication on its own, to me, that's not the answer.
Dr. Mick Crotty, thanks so much for speaking to me today on News Talk Daily.
Thank you very much.